Welcome to the Business and Leadership Channel. My name is Michelle Boulay, and I'm so honored to be a sponsor here at this amazing conference because it's my passion to help you connect to your own inner leader and let that transform the businesses and relationships you create. I'm a life coach and healer and an internationally recognized award-winning dance artist. And dancing taught me to listen to my own inner voice and let that guide me to my success. A very common thing that happens for business owners, creatives, and leaders is that you're so close to your next goal or breakthrough and then you stop. Doubt kicks in, worry, procrastination, fear, overwhelm, which kill growth in your business and creative process. So I'm giving a talk here on Saturday, October 24th, where you'll learn tools so that you can show up with clarity and belief in yourself and your ideas, consistency to keep showing up, and the embodied and intellectual understanding to move you gracefully through the challenges you'll meet as you grow, as you go for your goals. If you can't make it live, pick up your phone now, go to Instagram or Facebook, find me, follow me, and DM me the word success, and I'll send you the free resource I'll be sharing at my presentation. It's also in the show notes. However, I do recommend you attend live here or at my main stage presentation to get the full scope of what I'll be sharing to help you realize your creative dreams. And now, please enjoy this next presentation.
I have the pleasure to receive Mary Gordon. So Mary is the founder and president of Roots of Empathy, a social enterprise where Mary has been recognized by the UN, the WHO, and the Dalai Lama for her work. She's also has been honored with the Governor General of Canada Award for Innovation and presented with the Order of Canada. Roots of Empathy is an empathy-based program that we will talk about and we will present today along the topic of creating an empathic and emotionally literate world. Welcome, Mary.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here with you, Stephanie. Well, good morning to some people, good afternoon to others. And I'd just like to say that it is a delight to be able to speak with you today about emotional literacy. It's not everybody who wants to hear about emotional literacy. If you look at our school system, it's not anywhere on anyone's agenda. And if you think about it, we live in an emotionally illiterate society, where people can't find the words to talk about their feelings, where they feel so isolated because who you are is how you feel. Your emotions define basically who you are to yourself and to others. So in this emotionally illiterate world, through the work that we do with Roots of Empathy, we're trying to ensure that children, grade school children, have the opportunity not just to start school with the alphabet, the ABCs. They will help you to read books. They will not help you to read minds and hearts. So parents prepare children diligently to succeed in school, thinking you succeed in school, you succeed in life. Not so much. And I think the participants of this conference, this embodiment conference, understand there is more to living in this world than living alone inside, that our success and happiness in this world include our ability to connect and have healthy relationships. And that is what this session is about. And that is what the Roots of Empathy organization is about. It's about building empathy in the world. And emotional literacy is the affective part of empathy. And cognitive empathy is really perspective taking. And you put those two together, and you have what we call real empathy, which includes not just understanding how another person feels, but really feeling with them. And that is the dance of a successful life. So let me just go back to the idea of emotional literacy. What I mean by that is the ability to understand how you feel, the ability to talk about how you feel, to have the vocabulary of your emotions, to be able to be conversant with others in how you feel. The other part of it is the skill that we work on so much in Roots of Empathy, to help children read the emotional cues of the other. Now, mind you, we start with the no stress of reading the emotional cues of a baby. a baby who can't walk and talk, a baby whose body is a theater of emotion, a baby who communicates brilliantly, exclusively on an emotional level. So it's an endearing and heartwarming experience, non-threatening for children. I'll show you a little bit about that in a while, but I just want to go back to the idea of parents' expectation of preparing their children for school. That's a universal thing. But what is really universal that we don't think about is the first language of everyone who pops into this world or is cut into this world is our emotions. Babies start with a cry. That's how we know they're healthy. They cry. They communicate. They say, I'm here, I'm okay, or I'm not so okay, but here I am. So this idea of being able to express yourself emotionally, babies are more emotionally literate than many adults. And sometimes as we grow up, we pay a lot more attention to what we say rather than what we see and feel. And this whole idea of emotional illiteracy is a serious issue. I was invited to speak at the UN about it because it's not enough that children learn to read when they go to school. If they fail to learn to relate, we will have a failed society. If you look at music, one of my favorite groups from the old days, the Eagles, the song Desperado, one of the most poignant lines is, your sorrow is walking this world all alone. So that's the prison, walking this world alone. That prison can be unlocked and the key is emotional literacy. And we socialize little boys in this world to, generally speaking in the world, to not be emotionally literate, to not express themselves, that we see it as a vulnerability or a weakness or a non-male behavior. By the luck of the draw, little girls in many cultures are socialized to relate, socialized to use more emotional language. And somehow or other in the definition of malehood and femalehood, which is ridiculous anyway, that becomes part of the discourse. So starting school, let me go back to that. Starting school, which is a major milestone for children in all cultures, assuming that they have the privilege of being in a developed world where they have the option to go to school. Parents prepare them by teaching them the alphabet discreetly, making sure they recognize what their name looks like. And then they teach them about numbers. Well, you know what? A horse can count. Teaching our children how to count instead of how to care is a bit of a mistake, I would wager. They also teach the children the colors, lest they be embarrassed that the other children might know the colors and their children don't know the colors. Well, the colors of your feelings are a far more important discussion to have with the children, to give them the chance to be able to understand how they feel, to be able to know the word that describes sad, to be able to know the word that describes loneliness. Many children in this pandemic are very lonely, and that makes them feel sad. They don't quite know maybe what they're feeling. But when you have the words, because words are tools for thinking. As an old school marm, helping children learn how to read, the parallel of helping them learn how to relate is essential. And Roots of Empathy is a program that builds empathy in children and helps them in a parallel way in their classroom come to this emotional literacy, which will inform how they think and feel about themselves, how they relate to others, how they will parent in the future, what kind of leader will they be, how will they see themselves as a contributing member of society, what is their entitlement to happiness, what is their responsibility to the happiness and well-being of others. So I see emotional literacy as a foundational literacy in life. It is the first language. It's a universal language. How come we've created languages like Esperanto ages ago to try and have a leveling language? How is it now that we look at English might change as probably being the language of commerce? What about the language of connection? So our emotions are our high-speed internet connection to one another. So let me ask Sarah at this point to please cue up a video, a BBC video, because I don't want to spend a lot of time explaining what Roots of Empathy is all about, but really it is an undercurrent for our hour together. And I thought BBC did it better than I can do it. And if you wouldn't mind, Sarah, to cue that up, and hopefully you don't have challenges with technology.
We should be fine somehow. Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
There we go.
Our long-term goal is building a more caring, peaceful, and civil society where everybody feels a sense of belonging.
One little girl said, "You just can't help yourself but love her." But we're learning that she communicates how she's feeling, not with words as we do, but through her body, through her emotions, through her facial expressions, her tone of voice.
Did you notice what she did? Now she's got two.
They compared that she could not pick up the ball before, she did today. So they're learning about infant development. She's vulnerable. She's more vulnerable than they are. And we have many vulnerable children in our classrooms. And so it elicits this care for her.
She's adorable and she loves to play with us.
Babies, like, first they're very delicate, so you have to handle them, like, very gently.
One thing I like learning about of Roots of Empathy is learning about a newborn human body.
She can get, like, happy when you do this or, like, something fun. But then if you're, like, taking stuff from her, she'll get angry really easy.
If children just had the capacity to own their feelings, to understand them, to know how to talk about how they feel, they would not be islands. Our mental health would go up. Roots of Empathy is a bit of a trick. We use a baby as a vehicle to help children find the vulnerability and humanity in this little baby, so that then you can flip it back to their own experiences.
Do you think she's persistent, or do you think she's easily gives up?
She's persistent.
She's persistent. Put your hand up if you're persistent when you're trying to do something really hard. And put your hand up if sometimes it's frustrating to try and do something new. You think it's frustrating.
They realize this sudden universe of everybody in the world feels the same as me. We're not so disconnected. It's very hard to hate someone if you realize they feel like you. It's very hard to be bullying someone if you realize that.
An eagle fly, a rabbit, a beaver, a crazy elephant, na 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 na, na 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 na.
Roots of Empathy helps with teaching kids not to, like, fight.
And how do you feel when she's sad?
I feel like I want to cheer her up.
Sad as well. Like, what happens? What's wrong?
If we are educating children who can read well and compute well but can't relate well, we will have a failed society. Learning how to relate to one another requires empathy. You have to understand how the other fella feels.
Bye, baby Naomi, we'll see you soon. See you very soon. Thanks, guys.
So those are 9 and 10-year-old children, and the program operates for different age levels, and the idea is that developmentally, rather than academically, we offer different curricula for the different age groups, and we also have another program for preschool children, for 3 to 5-year-olds, called Seeds of Empathy, because you're never too young to learn to understand who you are, because who you are is how you feel. And if you want to bring your authentic self to the world and to your relationships, you need to be able to understand yourself, to be able to talk to yourself, to be able to reassure yourself and share yourself with those you love. And unfortunately, men have such a bad rap, as I was saying earlier on. And it's no accident that the number of suicides in the world and the number of people in prison is hugely dominated by men. The alienation they experience, that prison and walking the world all alone that the Eagles sang about. That is a reality, and we're going to break those cycles child by child. That's the goal at Roots of Empathy, to build a more caring, peaceful, and civil society by raising levels of empathy. And of course, affective empathy is emotional literacy. So you noticed probably in the video that we started with song. Not only did we start with song, and not only do we start every program, all 27 programs we have, we start with song, 27 classes a year. It's a whole year commitment. They watch the little baby start at 2 months and grow all the way through all the milestones. But we create, I guess, a tradition. And it's a routine, how we operate. But children have so few opportunities to have ritual in their lives, that we create a ritual for them that they tell us they love, they look forward to it, they know what's going to happen. The ritual is you sing that baby into your room, you welcome that baby with song. And in this conference, embodiment conference, what we're trying to do, as one child told me, this is a 10-year-old little fellow, he said to me, Roots of Empathy is about bringing your inside to your outside. And I said, can you tell me about that? He says, well, it's about taking how you feel inside and sharing it with the outside. And he's right. I mean, I couldn't have said it better. So the idea of that singing is, not only does every child have a face-to-face, eye-to-eye visit with the baby, but they also have the chance to touch the baby. And of all the senses, touch is the most powerful sense for connecting us to another. We work with the power of the attachment relationship between a parent and a baby. We bring daddies in as often as we can. The way our culture is, it's usually more often the mommy who makes this regular visit. But the idea is that that baby is loved into life by that attachment relationship. And that is the basis of where empathy develops. We are inherently empathic. We have the ability to develop that empathy based on how well we are responded to in that first year of life. So if there's empathic parenting, that the parent is attuned to the baby's feelings, the parent can respond in a contingent way, that the baby feels felt, connected, that when you cut that umbilical tube, you don't just cut the cord, you are separating physically, but that baby still feels very connected to the parent. And in society, it is a shame and a disgrace that we don't allow the time to nurture that relationship. That in many countries, parents are pushed back to work before they have the chance to really make a solid attachment relationship to that baby. So the parent is the person, or the parents, or whomever is in the emotional soup of that baby's first year of life. They are the ones who will help empathy flourish, or in cases of huge adversity, where you might have violence in the home, where you might have addictions, where you might have mental health issues, where you have the press of poverty making everything worse. Those are the things, the adversities, which can disarm a secure attachment relationship and result in a little child growing up without much empathy. And we just feel, in Roots of Empathy, that birth should not be destiny. And no one is to blame, not the family, not the baby, if a child grows up without the ability to relate to the other, without the ability to care and understand how others feel. That is a societal disaster. That could be the birth of sociopaths who have no capacity to really care and feel with the other. They might understand and have cognitive empathy, but without the ability to really feel how the other feels. And having worked with child abuse, physical and sexual, and having worked with domestic violence, what I discovered was that the common thread in all of that suffering was the absence of empathy. And that's why I created Roots of Empathy 25 years ago this year, so that we could break intergenerational cycles of violence and poor parenting. There's no one right way to be a parent, just like there's no one right way to love in this world. But however it is delivered, it has to be an attunement between those two people, that baby and that parent or family. So in our goal to build a more caring, peaceful, and civil society, the literacy that we most depend on is emotional literacy. And it can be taught in a very experiential way. And as you can see, Roots of Empathy is an experiential program that children touch the baby's feet twice during the session. They gaze into the baby's eyes. There is a huge amount of poetry about looking into the eyes of a baby and how a baby looks into your very soul. You know, as we get older, we can get lost in a thicket of words and not really understand and connect in an integrity, I guess, and connect with integrity. A baby has complete emotional integrity, no screens. What you see is what you get. And sometimes we value the cognitive connections that we have. Our way of being in the world is more defined and valued by what we know, by what level of education we have, by what job we have. But our personhood tends to be neglected. So in the Roots of Empathy program, we really work hard in valuing the value that the child puts on themselves, because that's the most important value. And all this vacuous stuff about tell yourself in the mirror that you're handsome and you're capable, that's hollow. That's a sham. Children really need to feel themselves, to understand themselves. And this Roots of Empathy methodology, which is based on authentic dialogue, we have many questions in Roots of Empathy. In fact, we only ask questions in Roots of Empathy. We don't tell children anything. Everything they have is already there. We draw it out. So it's almost a Socratic method in that we ask experiential questions, questions that do not rely on your knowledge base, questions that allow every child to engage, questions that really pull on, what do you think? What do you imagine? What do you remember? What do you feel? So that there's no wrong answer ever. In fact, children are very often better than we are as adults about doing this. So the reflective questioning and all of this experiential learning is deep learning. When the emotions are involved, as a pedagogue myself, I can tell you that learning, deep learning, is a combination of cognition and emotion. And when babies are born, their brains, those two capacities of cognition and emotion, are inextricably linked. The baby doesn't think separately and feel separately. The two are the one. That's why babies are just so completely encompassing. There's not a child in a Roots of Empathy classroom that doesn't feel connected to the baby, that doesn't love the baby. So they touch the baby. The most powerful human connection we have is touch. And look at the starvation, the hunger we have for touch during this pandemic. That we feel more disconnected from our loved ones. Everybody says, I just want to be able to hold her hand. I just want to be able to touch. And of course, our elderly people who are locked in homes are starved for touch. So I think one of the things that has come out of this pandemic is that we realize how dependent we are for human touch, that this capacity we have to feel, to love, to connect is also dependent on our ability to touch. But emotional literacy will help us say the words, feel the words, make that bridge to the other that we can't touch maybe, but it doesn't mean we can't connect. So in Roots of Empathy, for purposes of the people who are drawn to this conference, the embodiment concept, I love that because in Roots of Empathy, very often educators don't necessarily understand why we sing so much. We sing so much because when you sing, it's solidarity. When you sing for the vulnerability of a tiny baby, it's shared, caring, and focused. It actually, this whole experience of Roots of Empathy about caring together and building solidarity and understanding and wishing the best for that baby's life, the unselfish, altruistic caring, that boosts moral development. This is a very interesting concept because we never talk about should. We don't ever deal with shame or blame or guilt. We only empower children to be their own motor, not to tell them or shame them about their feelings. Very often, little children, their feelings are denied. And it's just because we can't deal with adults with feelings of grief or loss or disappointment or jealousy or any of those negative feelings. So we deny children's feelings and they tunnel underground. We say to the children, oh, don't be so silly, you're not afraid of that. Or there's nothing to be worried about. So children learn not to share their negative feelings. And that's a tragedy. So in Roots of Empathy, we go out of our way to give children the megaphone, to give them the megaphone to talk to themselves, to talk to the world, to talk to one another, so that it's absolutely empowering when children learn that others are afraid of the dark, that the former classroom bully is afraid of the dark and has a bedwetting problem. Now, can you imagine the courage of a 9-year-old child to say out to the class, I'm most embarrassed and I'm most worried when I wet the bed. And nobody in that class giggles, titters, or tells. And that's the big thing, that there's trust built in the classroom. How many children feel trust in the classroom when everything is built on competition? Competition, okay. When you're an adult, fine. In business, grand. Not in the classroom. Not okay. Destructive, disarming, disabling, cruel. Children can't compete on an equal level. So what we want to do in Roots of Empathy and what we do and have evidence for it. In fact, I'll tell you later about our evidence. This is not just cute, this is substantial. Children learn to collaborate. And in the grown-up world, if we want peace, don't you think we need to collaborate with one another? To be able to take the perspective of the other, to be able to understand what's really central to them. How can we ever get to peace if we don't have that peace pill of empathy, if we don't have the capacity to reach out and to understand? So in the Roots of Empathy classroom, just 1 year, that's all it takes. And the research shows, having done randomized longitudinal studies, peer-reviewed, published, university-based studies, that children maintain this capacity. So when they have Roots of Empathy, they are more able to understand themselves, to communicate with the other, to connect with the other, to be able to care about the other. So this idea of introducing into the classroom, not competing with the other, but sharing and caring with the other, with finding our commonalities, with wanting the other to succeed. And in my view, you know, we ask the children in Roots of Empathy, what do they wish for their baby? And I spoke about this yesterday, and I'll say to you today, if anybody wants to give a wish for these Roots of Empathy babies during this pandemic, because we are still teaching Roots of Empathy in this pandemic, we've taken the Roots of Empathy green blanket, a very high touch program, and we've made it a high tech program. We're connecting with little Roots of Empathy babies in their home by video, by Zoom, by pictures. It's not as great as touching those babies' feet and looking to the baby's eyes, but at least they are having, the children are having the experience of together learning about a little baby's body, as that 9-year-old said. Because we do teach the children about how a baby's body develops physically. What are the physical milestones? And we teach them that because we want the children to then understand their own milestones. But we also look at the 5 domains of development, infant development, cognition and emotion, all those other things, and how that baby in that first year of life checks in with the parent before they make any new move. When they first learn to crawl, they take a few little moves, turn around and check in with the parent. Am I okay to proceed? And the children learn to recognize those secure attachment points. So the whole idea of children in a classroom singing to a baby, as they do in this tradition where we sing the baby a lullaby if we think the baby's getting sleepy. We sing the baby in, we welcome. We sing the baby out, we welcome. We touch the baby. We do songs that involve movement. Understanding your physical body is important. Connecting your physical body to your emotional self, to your mind. Bringing the learning that, as the Dalai Lama said about Roots of Empathy, it brings the mind and the heart together. And that is who we are. So I should probably stop here and give you a break. Did you want to say something?
Yeah, sorry. I was just thinking, and it's up to you again, you know, because as I've done the program, I was thinking if it's okay with you, if I translate a few things that is embodied related that I've seen in Roots of Empathy.
Yeah, wonderful. I really appreciate that, Stephanie.
Thank you. So the first thing, as you mentioned, because I didn't want to interrupt, is, you know, when you say hello, each children say hello to the baby. And, you know, they touch the feet and you stay like a few seconds to create oxytocin and contact with the baby. It's something I've seen in the children that there's two things that I found really amazing. The first one is that each children want to be seen by the baby. It's something that, you know, they're longing for. And the second thing is what I found amazing is that the baby focus on the person, the child that needs the most attention. It's something that I found, I mean, it's a baby, it's not like thinking or anything, it just knows for some reason where to look at and which child needs it most. So yeah, for instance, that's one thing that I found amazing on why it works so well to have a baby in the class instead of just talking about emotional literacy, but just like feeling it. It's something, yeah.
Well, something Stephanie, like thank you. Thank you for kind of realigning me with why I'm here and who the people are with whom I want to connect. And let me tell a story based on, well, there's a million stories, but the one I think of when you tell me that is a story of a class of 10-year-old children. And this was in Western Canada. And it's 10 years ago or maybe more. So I was visiting and but speaking about crawling, I guess, which is why I thought of it. And the children always start each class with 3 breaths to try and bring them together in breath and to try to bring them together with themselves. And then the first question after the baby has come around and been visited by, and you know this routine or ritual, visited by each child, and you're right, they look right into the baby's eyes. The first question is, how do you think our baby is feeling today? And the children all have different answers. Some of those answers are really about how they are feeling, because sometimes the children project. And in this day, the children have questions. You see, it's not just the visit with the family. The week before and the week after, we have a class with the children. We have one class where the children have are invited to really think about the baby and reflect on the previous visit and to think about what questions they want to ask the parent about the baby. And then post-family visit is to reflect on what happened and then everything that happened on the green blanket is brought back to the child. So the children had, in the post-family visit, had said they wanted to ask the mommy, had the baby learned to crawl yet? Because the baby had been trying, and you know all the pre-crawling skills. So they're very excited. So the mother said, I have great news for you. Over the weekend, the baby started to crawl. And the children cheer. They literally cheer. They clap. They whoop. And very often, teachers from the next classroom come over to see what's going on. Because they're happy for the baby. They feel with the baby. It's independence. You can move. You're not a beached whale anymore. So the one little fella said, so if you put the baby on the green blanket, do you think the baby might crawl? And the mommy said, well, let's see. So because the blanket was on a linoleum floor and there wasn't a rug underneath to anchor it, the Roots of Empathy instructor said, children, why don't you all hold a little bit of the blanket so the baby will have traction and the blanket won't wrinkle under the baby? So every child in the class held on to a piece of the green blanket in solidarity, except one little boy. So I wondered why he had his hands in his pocket. So I wondered why this little fella isn't holding on to the blanket. He had such a gentle, sweet expression. Anyhow, in line with your question about the wisdom of babies, that they find the child who needs them most, this little boy, this little baby, it was a little baby boy. He crawled, and the children are holding their breath to see who will he crawl to. He crawled over, made a beeline for the little boy who had his hands in his pocket. I thought, how unusual. So anyhow, he crawled over and he put his hands on the little boy's knees and he arched his body up so he could be closer to the little fellow's face. And the children were sort of speechless. And nobody said anything. You could hear a pin drop. And everybody was thinking, the baby is inviting you to lift him up. And he was inviting the little boy to lift him up. And it seemed like forever. But finally, the little boy took his hands out of his pocket and he lifted the baby up. And everybody cheered, great, great excitement. And it turns out that his hands were very deformed. He had a thumb and the both thumbs in a different position than normal and had many abnormalities with his hands. And in that moment, I didn't know there had been a problem. There were children who cried, gently cried, because they felt with, and that's what empathy is. The mother cried, and if I'm not careful, I will. So the idea is there is a wisdom in babies. Because of emotional literacy, they are able to tap into a level of our emotions that we outgrow. I want to go back to that ability to connect with others, and sometimes words lead us astray. So there are many stories, and that's all I'm telling, or I'll completely lose it. So what I'd like to do right now, in aid of composure, is to show you a video of a 13-year-old boy who had Roots of Empathy in his class. And this is the end of the year. And every year in Roots of Empathy, we put on a research symposium. It's got nothing to do with our program. It has to do with our thirst for transfer of knowledge in the world. There are so many brilliant things happening about research that impact, particularly in neuroscience, that will bring freedom to children, that will bring understanding to the world about the brilliance of being a human, and that the importance of this period of childhood, and that validate childhood. So we bring scientists together. In fact, last year we had exclusively female neuroscientists. Why? Because the discrimination in science against women is beyond ridiculous. So anyhow, I always invite some children who had Roots of Empathy, usually in grade 7 or 8, because they feel confident to speak. So this young man, Romario, he's from our Center of Excellence School, This is a school that is in a neighborhood, which is probably one of our most diverse neighborhoods. It's our center of excellence school, not because they have high academic standing. In fact, they don't have high academic standing, but they are a miracle. This school is a miracle because of the children. You know, most of the children in Romario's class were not born in Canada. They come from other countries in the world. And I think the answer to our problems is inclusion and diversity. This classroom and this young man are miracles, and they are the hope of how we can build a world that includes everybody. So we ask the children to share something of their Roots of Empathy experience. We do it over lunch. And I can tell you, when Romario spoke and the other three kids in his class spoke, people stopped chewing. They almost stopped breathing. So let's see my hero, Romario, one of nine children.
Hello, my name is Romario, and I really love Roots of Empathy. Every time Roots of Empathy happens in our class, I'm happy. I start to feel softer, happier, calm, and just joyful. I look around our classroom, and everyone is happy. It's like Roots of Empathy just changed us. All our anger and all our stress, it goes away. We feel like little kids again. We talk together and we feel like family. Nobody is scared to express their ideas, and nobody hides their feelings. They let it out. Playing together with our baby Max is just wonderful. You learn a lot about love and Roots of Empathy. You find out about people's feelings and how to be able to understand how and why they might be feeling that way. Sometimes people my age might feel like they're not cared about, but this program helps us understand that we are always loved, which is the most important thing about love. This is why Roots of Empathy is such a good idea for any school. Roots of Empathy helps me and a lot of other people see the good in themselves and others. We feel part of the group with everyone in our class coming together like a family. That's one of the best things about this program, because it makes you always feel like smiling and being happy. And I would love to have Roots of Empathy every year.
So you can see how for Romario, Roots of Empathy was like a vitamin. It complemented his emotional health. And for most classrooms, there is emotional shrapnel flying around all the time. Very often children are cruel and critical of one another, but I can say you can't dictate kindness. You can't legislate caring. But when a child develops on their own, you can't teach empathy, you can reach it. It's something that this emotional literacy is something that is not just about bringing a baby into a room. There is a methodology. There is a 25-year history here. It's not as simple as bringing in a baby. It's focused attention. It's the questioning, which never has a wrong answer. It's the idea of intrinsic motivation, that we don't ever praise children. We don't ever compare children, because the comparison is theirs to make. And if you don't ever praise children, suddenly all of the competition drops away. We don't ever talk about it. It just happens. So I'd like to stop talking and invite people to ask questions. Any question is a good question, just like we say in Roots of Empathy. No feeling is wrong and no question is wrong. So please.
Thank you, Mary. So in the meantime, what people are asking question, there's also, if it's okay with you, mm-hmm. Something I would like to add that I've seen while doing the program mm-hmm. is, it's too hard to explain everything, but what I've seen is through the year, and I remember a specific time when we put children together, and actually the program is enabling people to speak. I mean, the children to speak and to share their feelings and so on. being in a class of, I think it was 9, 10 years old, going through the circle and seeing even at this young age, children saying like really superficial things like, yeah, I have this car and my dad does this and I'm going on holidays. And suddenly, slowly, one opens up and then everyone's opens up slowly because they feel a safe space for that. And I remember when I've done this program, the teacher was even not aware of what was going on in many children's life. And they all felt safe after a year to be able to share within the school, within their class, things they never have been sharing. So I just wanted to add that.
Well, we say that it opens the heart, but it also opens the voice and gives children permission to bring their authentic self to class. You know, teachers learn. We have so many stories. We talk about the baby, the safety of the baby, and in the theme on sleep, yours, mine, and ours, we talk, as you know, Stephanie, about shaken baby syndrome, and we talk about sudden infant death syndrome. And the number of children in the world who have come out and shared tearfully because they think it's a secret, it's an ugly secret. You're not allowed to talk about loss or grief. They share that my baby got dead, as one little child in grade one said, my baby got dead from what you're talking about. And we never frighten children. We respect and only say what we think they're. So that child was able cathartically, and that teacher was shocked. And, you know, and one child moved into a new community, into this school, and everybody was welcoming the child. Well, the reason the child moved was because the child was raped in another, you know, and then came and being able to unburden yourself from the things that are hidden in that chest is huge.
Absolutely. Thank you. So we have a few questions here. Okay, so the first one is just curious, where or how do you recruit baby for this work?
Well, it sounds difficult, but it's really in the first year that you have the program in a community, and you probably were aware of this, Stephanie, in Wales, you have to do a lot of showing of pictures and explaining what the role of the baby and the parent is. And people are very suspicious. It seems ridiculous to be talking about washing your hands and making sure the space is clean in this environment. But we do have the big green blanket that the baby is the baby's territory. The children don't come on the green blanket and the children wash their hands. And that's the biggest concern, really. But the second year you have the program, we have parents calling up and saying, what month should I get pregnant in order to be a Roots of Empathy mother? And, or a dad would call up and say, you know, my wife and I are newly pregnant. Are we in the right timing to be a Roots of Empathy family? So it is so rewarding. And we want the baby from the community because that baby becomes a rock star overnight. And, you know, particularly if the mom is first time mom and home and maybe a bit lonely, detached from all the friends at work, etc. It is a huge anchoring back into the community. Because if you walk down the street with your baby, everybody in the school knows you're a Roots of Empathy family, not just the baby, because there's a big bulletin board goes on the hall about each visit and what's going on with the baby and the baby's first tooth and all of these milestones. The baby's finally sitting up, can see the world from a different vantage point. So finding the baby in the second year and subsequent years is a piece of cake. Yeah, a competition sometimes.
Thank you. There's a question from Diana who say, have you been able to offer this in a modified way with special needs children? I work primarily with nonverbal children with severe medical complications or severe autism. I feel like this is the part missing in their lives.
And I agree. I completely agree. When a child doesn't have the ability to talk, we often think they're not feeling and they're not thinking. And yes, we do offer this program. And would you imagine it's not that adapted? because children, autistic children, we work hugely. In most places, the autistic children are included in the regular programming. They have a special worker who comes with them. And that worker, yesterday in the film, there was an autistic child. Actually, in the classroom you saw today, there was an autistic child. You would never pick the child out, but the child participates. So yes, we have worked with children's hospitals where they have their school in the hospital because they're not physically, they're fragile. They're not able to go to a school, but they have school in the hospital, the same children in the same classroom. And we have brought programs there. We very often reach out, well, we always reach out to children who are born with Down syndrome, because these babies are super lovable. Their development milestones are different, just as lovable as any other baby. And the children get the idea, all babies deserve love and are lovable and are reachable. And we also look for babies with facial cranial abnormalities, particularly cleft lip and club feet. Because with club feet especially and cleft palate, the children follow the baby through the year with the various surgeries. And they become such advocates. And it normalizes having something physically different about you. And it's not just, we talk about the differences in the world. And what brings us all together is our emotion, our ability. You know, that is the uniting piece. And if our bodies are different, and if our color is different, and our culture is different, so what? What makes us the same is our feelings. So yes, yes, and yes.
Thank you. Another question is, what tips could you give parents at home with their children? I think it's a question for nowadays.
Well, the parent is the child's first teacher, their lifelong teacher, and their indelible teacher. And children can learn emotional literacy best at home. Now that you might be having more time with your child at home because of the pandemic, just being able to listen more and to help the child understand and put into words how they might be feeling. And the best way to do that, I mean, everything is age related, but the best way to help children develop emotional literacy is to share how you feel. You are the best model the child will ever have. And I am still, in all these decades of life, still very informed, my life, my feeling, everything, how I've used my life and spent my life, very informed by my upbringing, by the love in my family, so of birth. So if parents share with their children some of their vulnerability, for example, I feel so discouraged today because I can't seem to organize anything. So that the child knows it's okay to say you feel discouraged. And then it gives the child to say, when do you feel discouraged? Do you feel discouraged today? Yesterday, did you feel discouraged? They'll know what it means because you've qualified it by saying, because I couldn't get anything organized. Or to be able to say, you know, it's just not working out. I cannot get this bread to work. You know how we went nuts baking bread? With the pandemic, you couldn't find bread and then you couldn't find yeast. So we were going back to our roots. And what is more sort of homey than bread? But many people had discouragement. So to be able to say as a parent that you feel discouragement makes it okay for your child to be vulnerable. And to say, you know, I'm disappointed that I can't see my best friend who would come over every Tuesday morning before work for coffee. I'm really disappointed, but I'm so happy to be able to play with you, but I still miss my friend. Do you miss friends? Because the ability to talk about loneliness, to share with your family when you feel lonely, allow it. Our vulnerability, just like the vulnerability of the baby, makes us adorable. That's why we fall in love. We fall in love with someone who can share their feelings with us. It makes them lovable. And the intimacy goes beyond physical intimacy. The real intimacy in life is emotion connection. So for families who have the ability for loving touch with one another, the ability to bring words to that, I feel so safe and happy when I hold you in my arms. When do you feel safe and happy? I feel so worried when I don't know if we're going to be able to get enough money to do the things we need to do. You don't want to share huge vulnerability and make the child take over your worry, but reasonable worry is good, that the child sees that the parent, whose words will be in their head forever, that we make ourselves vulnerable and we show what are the things that, you know, most make us connect to the other. Children pay strict attention when you tell them how you feel, and no attention when you tell them what to do. You know, tidy up your room doesn't invite immediate connection. But if you say, I understand how overwhelming it is to tidy up your room, but we got to do it, so let's go at this together. How would you feel if I do the Lego and you put away the books? If I help you that way, would that make you feel we can do it better? Or what would you suggest? So all of these things, bringing feeling into the deeds of the day, the things that you have to do, makes everything go better.
Thank you, Mary. I'm aware we just have a minute and a half left. I just wanted to share something as well from my own experience as being an instructor is, and having two children of 7 and 10 years old, is that I've learned also from Roots of Empathy the different temperament traits. And something that I hope people would be more aware of, that enables you to accept more your children or the children in schools. So, and even for their own children to understand that they have different temperament traits and that is okay. So that would enable to create more acceptance for the children and then at school and later on. But that's just, I think there's a lot of people who are asking, where can you find you? And they have questions. So I think Yvonne have put like all the information in the chat. Mm-hmm. Again, if you want to watch this this session, you still have 48 hours to watch the replay on the website. Otherwise, you know, if you want to watch this session or the panel we had yesterday or all the rest of the session, you can still upgrade the package of the Embodiment Conference. Mary, it has been a pleasure to receive you and to share words of empathy with everyone. And
Well, thank you, Stephanie. And I really feel this is a community that I'm delighted to connect with. And I didn't really speak about research, but there's a 1 minute little video you could add on if you like to, that I had suggested. And it basically just shows that children who have a year of Roots of Empathy have over time, 3 years and on, kept their aggression and violence and bullying down, massive reduction. But the good news is, the increase in pro-social behaviors, which is caring, sharing, helping, and kindness, that they stay up. And I think what we need in this world is more caring and more connection. And I feel privileged to be able to be part of offering this program on 4 continents. And we're all the same wherever we are. And to be able to build that caring, peaceful, and civil society is a privilege. So I wish you well, Stephanie, and what a treat for me that you were an instructor. It made this 100% more fun for me.
Thank you, Mary. We just have the last question before we finish. We always ask to our speakers, what would be for you the top tip for being embodied?
I think to listen. To listen to yourself, to hear your inner voice, to not just listen to your heartbeat, which is a good thing, to listen to your breath, but to listen carefully and not judgmentally about what you think and feel, and then to be able to listen to the people you care about. because listen is, I think, one of the most powerful words in the universe, and it's not a valued word.
Thank you very much, Mary. Thank you. And thank you, everyone, for being here. Looking forward to see you all very soon. Thank you.
Thank you.